You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today, as you are every day. I love you. I do. On Dr. Michelle Live, I am, we have a lot to talk about today, so let me stop stammering over my own words and tell you that you can call 573-4BREAD-4 to text and to be on the air, to not be on the air. You can leave your verbal message with someone and you can remain anonymous. You can say your name, you can be on the air. You can also email me anytime, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also get on to breadboxmedia.com and become a friend of the show. You can scroll over to Dr. Michelle Live and, well, actually first on to friend of the show, then over to Dr. Michelle Live, and you can become a friend of the show. So it's been a busy morning for me here. Don't know what it's been like for you. And when I got back from my volunteering yesterday, which I just thoroughly love, I just love it. I cannot tell you why. I don't know why. There's a lot of reasons behind it, I guess, but I absolutely love doing this. I can fuddle my way through. I can have an injury, I can have hoarseness in my voice, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Sometimes you want to pull your hair out because we really are like herding a bunch of chickens. I mean, we're just, we have to be a little bit intense, I'll put that nicely, to do this week after week after week. We have to also do some singing, and you never know what the group of people is going to be like, and if they're going to be particularly, let's say, there's no conditions in this particular place, so it's not a shelter, so you don't have to be sober. If someone is not sober and they create too much of a fuss, then we have people, because sometimes people actually want to fight. Then we have ways to make sure that that doesn't happen. But we have the mentally ill who aren't taking their medications, the traumatized, the people who are very ill from all their drugs, alcoholics, just whoever, people who just are homeless because they're homeless. So there's a lot of interesting things. And when I left yesterday, I totally forgot we had an election. By the time I was gone, I didn't even think, oh yeah, we're going to have a new president by the time I wake up in the morning. And so I woke up this morning, we have a new president. So you're all going to hear about that all day long. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going to talk about that. And I have a little bit different thing that hit me, but this is not what I want to go on today. Today, I want to talk about being a survivor. Now you might say, well, I don't have anything I'm surviving. You know, I'm not surviving cancer. I'm not surviving a liver transplant. I'm not surviving abuse. I'm not surviving a mental illness or war trauma or a fire trauma or whatever it is. But I challenge you, many of you anyway, to take a look at yourself and take a look at the things that you feel are blocking you, holding you, have you captive. I know there's a lot of you out there who feel that. You do, because one, you tell me, but two, as Catholics, there's a lot of literature out there in the Catholic world. And as Christians, there's a lot of literature out there in the Christian world. And as in the secular world, there's also a lot of literature out there that has to do with breaking your chains, breaking your bonds, releasing the real you, living up to your potential. Everything from that old book, The Secret, to fast forward to whatever is now, Google, anything. I mean, it's just all there. We have a mass of people who feel chained in this most abundant country on the face of this earth. We have a mass of people who feel chained and bound. And as way back when we first started the war in Iraq, or we first entered into the war, way back after 9/11, I saw, oh gosh, I can't say his name right, so I won't say it. But there was a, oh gosh, I want to say his name, but I can't. I can't pronounce it. I just can't. But anyway, he was interviewed. He was the leader of the country that we were warring with. And he looked into the camera and he said, "This is not a war on the ground. This is a war of the minds." And, you know, he was, who knows what his motivation was, and it never really went anywhere like with in the way he's talking. It did in some respects, but it was more of a terror tactic or a verbal tactic for those to instill fear. But he talked about that. And of course, we've heard that forever. It's in the minds. You have to heal the mind. You have to heal the heart, the soul, the mind. And part of what we do when we realize that we are in a situation where we are so in the battlefield of our minds, not only a battle for your mind, your children's mind, but you're also in a battle of other people's minds. Why do you think people commit suicide? Because of text comments or Facebook comments or bullying, cyberbullying from someone you've never even seen. This happens. We read about it. How can this happen? How can somebody seduce somebody 600 miles away, and they're talking to a 15-year-old as if they're a 15-year-old and they're really a 50-year-old man? How can that happen? It's minds. It's the unseen. It's the ethereal that's coming in and out, sure as it were tanks, sure as they were tanks. So we're going to talk about surviving, because many of us are survivors of families of alcoholics, families of mental abuse, families of physical abuse, families of despair, families of just going down the wrong path. We look back, we say, well, they did the best they can. And yeah, they did. Many times they don't. So I want to talk about survivors, but one of the things I think today when I saw that we had a new president, and I was looking at one of the videos that was up on Yahoo as I'm logging onto Yahoo. And I was listening to our new president's kind of acceptance speech at the time he found out. And he had his wife and his children. He's naming all these who he's so thankful for. And it was this line of children. I mean, I thought, well, how many does he have? I have no idea how many he has. He's got a lot of kids. But then I started thinking, part of one of our battles that we have is the battle for womanhood, the battle of femininity, the battle of how to be a father to a girl, the battle of pornography, the battle of eternal youth for women and the double standard. I'm not a big old feminist here. But what I need to say is we are getting these thoughts, these constant messages that women are whatever is needed at the time. Women are discardable. I'm not making any judgments on this one person. But now that he's the president of the United States, he becomes the like any celebrity. You start looking at him and you start saying, okay, what are his examples? What's around him? What does he have? And you realize that this entire line of children, many of them all had different mothers. And many of the mothers all looked very much the same, only at almost the exact same age. So when one kind of reaches that zenith point, then the other one steps in and the other one. And I'm not minimizing the relationships. I'm not minimizing anything. I want you to think about these things, because what we look at and what we put our hopes in, we also have oftentimes do not have a holistic viewpoint, because we are now learning and being trained to see the sound bites, to see one part and ignore the rest. And we, as Christians and Catholics, we tend to want people, we know certain topics like pro-life, let's say, or we want to say, no, don't look at just one part. Look at everything that we have. Look at the whole picture, please. So I want to talk about looking at the whole picture. I want to talk about what we are survivors from, how we can move forward, how we can begin to give ourselves permission to really see what we see and move forward in the world that we live in. Well, I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live.
Like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click friend of the show to provide your support today. Thank you. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. So we're going to focus on you. We're going to focus on the actual thing you have some control over, because we really don't have control over very much. When we look at this compartmentalized world, what kind of got me off on this topic this morning is when I was looking at the videos, there were two young psychologists that were being interviewed on two, I guess, probably CNN and I don't know what other, but it was just on whatever video came up on Yahoo. And they were talking very seriously about a disorder called election stress disorder. And I had to do a little bit of a double take because, yes, it's always been that way back since the beginning of the country and probably in other countries, too. And we can say this may be we always say it's the most crucial time because we see everything going downhill. Well, things do go downhill. That's true. But I came across, now this was November 4th. So it was a couple days before election. And this was from the LA Times. And it says, "It seems like everyone I know has it. Last week, my kindergartner woke up at 5 a.m. with nightmares about two people running for president. One friend wrote on Facebook that she is barely sleeping at all and now fills the pre-done hours canning fruit. I've heard reports of chest pains and short-term Xanax prescriptions within my circle as November 8th draws near. Election stress disorder may not be well known, but it's definitely real, and its impact should not be dismissed," said Dr. Ashim Shah, vice chair for the community psychiatry at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. "Symptoms of this once every 4 years disorder include heart palpitations, shortness of breath, sweaty palms, loss of appetite, trouble sleeping, and a sinking and doomed feeling. The cause? Intense concern about the outcome of the presidential election. If you're among the victims of this disorder, now know that you are not alone. The American Psychological Association reports that the election is the source of a significant amount of stress for more than half of all Americans and is prevalent in both parties. For 3,500 adults surveyed in August, American Psychological Association found 55% of Democrats and 59% of Republicans said the election is a very significant or somewhat significant source of stress. Voters who use social media are more likely than those who don't to say the election is a source of stress. Some may feel they have no choice but to remain in a state of all-out panic until the votes have been counted. However, for those who want tips on how to manage their stress between now and Tuesday, Shaw offers the following." Okay, I'm going to read this to you because I have something to say about these things. So number one, turn off the TV news. Number two, write down your worst fears, then address them. Number three, which I cannot seem to get to. Let me see if I can scroll that. Why won't it scroll? Well, I can't get number three. For some reason, I can't get number three. Maybe it doesn't want me to get number three. Oh, there we go. Number three, remember that very little will change overnight. Number four, if you must, ask your doctor for medication. If your candidate wins, take it easy on election night. Think of the kids. That was number six. And somehow my computer is freezing over and over again. I think we're going to get some videos here. That is not what I needed to do. All right. So I think we've got six of them. Those are some of his, I guess that was the last one with six. Think of the kids. All right. So we have this advice. I'll read it to you again if I can get this. We have this advice to turn off the news, write down your worst fears and address them. Remember that very little will change overnight. Ask your doctor if you must for medication. If your candidate wins, take it easy on election night and think of the kids. All right. So this is all good advice, but it's good advice for everything. But it also brings home. So on the one hand, we always have the real rattlesnake and then the fake rattlesnake. Remember I told you the real rattlesnake is a rattlesnake and it has a full functioning rattle and it will curl up and strike you and kill you if it strikes you. A fake rattlesnake looks exactly like a rattlesnake, even with a rattle coloring, rattle marking, but it doesn't rattle and it doesn't have a venomous bite. So it's just there for survival. So I look at this and I think, hey, that's great, great advice. But it's great advice for everything. Turn off the social media. Remember that nothing is going to change immediately overnight. If you need to go to a doctor, go to a doctor. Take it easy, you know, on before something stressful and think of the kids. Well, but what really, then the other hand, I'm looking at that. I'm thinking, really? Now we have a disorder. Sanctioned by the American Psychological Association. Now, 50%, that means 50% don't feel this. And that's 50% of the 3,000 out of all the people in the United States. Those were the ones that were, it was a survey. And they had to say, is it very significant or somewhat significant? Now, if any of you, I am not a sports person, but if any of you are sports people, and I know many of them, you probably share the sweaty palms, the like complete intensity, the anxiety about your team winning, you dress all up and you're all, you know, it sounds like anything that you would anticipate something that is tight, competitive, maybe will lead to something else. Now, this is our country. These are our policies, but no matter what each one person says, it has to get through Congresses, Senates, this, that, people, votes. There's a lot to go through and we all know that. So I just want to put that out there to you. Now, it brings up very good points here. The mental health of the nation is predicated on the mental health of the individual, the ability of the nation to embrace one part while there's a complete contradiction in the other seems to be what we do. The acceptance of lies and brutality is our political system. It just is. When didn't we see, I don't care what side you're on, when haven't we seen, at least in my memory, the viciousness, and that's just part of it. You're punching each other out. Boxers in a ring. Do they really hate each other? I don't know, but they certainly will keep going to the death. It's just a brutality. It is the Colosseum. It's just a brutality. It happens. So I want you to back way up, because we have something we haven't had before as completely a part of our waking and sleeping, and that is social media. And again, as I said in the beginning, if social media can cause a person, without even knowing their attackers, to commit suicide because they hit a point of vulnerability, we inflame each other. We ignite our fuel. I told you already that someone had used one sentence from one of my programs to help dismiss the fight that I feel that will eventually help other people. But that's okay. I mean, it is what it is. It's one thing. That's what they do. That's what we do. That's what everyone does. So it's what it is. And it will either stand up on its own merit or it won't. And plus, it's not that big a deal. It's a very tiny deal in the light of the whole mission. So, you know, it's just that's what people do. So when we take our tunnel vision view of anybody, we have to, and we say, no, I accept you. I accept you completely. We have to then not look at these other things. So you may, let's say you loved either candidate. Each candidate you had to, in order to fight to where you might have election stress syndrome, to fight tooth and nail for a candidate and defending a candidate, while you had to at the same time know somewhere inside of you that there's a bunch of lies going on both sides, and that yes, no matter what they say, they can always back up and go, hey, I mean, that's what I want, but Congress won't let me do it or whatever. And you also have to look at other things that are getting painted across our social landscape that we will start accepting as truth. We've seen this happen. We've seen it happen with all of our presidents in history who are no longer living, and for the ones that are still living recently, that what they do as people, what they do in their social life, how they treat their wives and families, because up until, well, still, all of our presidents have been men. So how do they treat the women in their life? What do they want for their daughters, and how do they treat their wife or wives? What is that about? So these things are really important to look at. But when we come back from the break, then we're going to take this whole concept of having something like election stress disorder and apply it to who you are right now, and how to take back. You've got to take back you and take back your voice, to know where your power really lies. And that's going to help heal you so that we're not all fragmented, so that we're not so easily put into a disorder, an actual disorder, that we can go and get medication for it. Well, talk to you on the other side of the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573 for Bread Full.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Host Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573 for Bread 4. So I'm juxtaposing this new concept of election stress disorder. Actually, disorder, where you can walk into your doctor and say, I have an election stress disorder, or you don't have to say that, but you can exhibit these symptoms, and they can give you a highly addictive, when this article in the LA Times, the Los Angeles Times, by a staff writer, was talking about her circle. She looked fairly young. That one, I guess, from experience in her circle, somebody got a short-term prescription for Xanax. Xanax is, which is alprazolam. It is one of the most addictive of the benzodiazepines, like the Valiums and all that. It's highly addictive because it acts fast and it wears off fast. And so it is very difficult to wean off something like that. Now, short term, and many of you might have had to have been on them short term. And usually when you have something, a death or something where a doctor says, you know, or you can't, you just cannot handle it. And you have the short term or terminally ill people, sometimes they get this huge anxieties because of the physical stuff going on. And they will be given Xanax. I'm not against that. However, when it starts, you can tell when it starts to like wear off after a very short period of time. But the addiction potential will be low if it's short term. So, you know, you can take it. And if you've taken it, it's not like you have to take it forever. And if you are taking it, don't get off of it, okay? Under the care of a doctor, always with medications. However, that now it is declared as a disorder. It's not in the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, that is kind of like how we look at how we diagnose the criteria for different mental disorders, which is, you know, we're not going to discuss that particular book at this point, but reference. But the point is, we have this disorder. Now it's a disorder. It's in the general population as a disorder, rather than as a really tight race that some people feel that the fate of the entire nation, the country, your grandchildren, who you were born into, what you immigrated into, if you're an immigrant, that whole course and your life and your children's life are going on another part of the road that will be driven by a particular person, whether no matter who you voted for, who you wanted. The other part of that I find for me that hit me, again, I'm kind of looking at this not from a political standpoint, but I know, and I'm sure many of you will agree, that during the sexual indiscretions of one of our presidents, we saw, if we look back, we can see an entire turning point of a nation on the confusion of what sex even was. What is sex? And we had an entire youth that now are adults that we found through, I think, even on Oprah, they had talked about a documentary or a movie that was made about these particular parties that were being done where, and I'm not going to get graphic on here, you can use adults, your imaginations, where certain kinds of sexual encounter, although we would say that you wouldn't want your child involved in that, that wasn't considered sex because the leader of the free world brought that into question. So we do follow. And the other part of us can go, well, no, that has nothing to do. It's all about consenting adults. It's all about this and that. But again, if you really look holistically, that doesn't mean you're going to necessarily do anything. You may be fine with it or not fine with it. But I need you. I want you. And I want it for myself to stop ignoring the incongruities we have in our own selves, where that gives that cognitive dissonance, that dissonant chord. If you are a person who, no matter which topic it is, that you find that you're kind of like, you're ignoring, you're pushing down a little voice in you that is really, really upset because of an incongruity that's being exhibited by a person. I don't care whether it was Hillary Clinton or whether it was Donald Trump. You come to terms with what that's doing in you because you're powerless over them. You're powerless over all the country. You can do what you can and you make the best choice you can. And at the end of any day, we cannot be inside someone else's head motivation. We don't know what's going to happen. That's why as Catholics, we oftentimes pray for them. Because no matter who walks through those doors and who goes into that Oval Office, we can pray that at some place their heart is turned toward the good. That's what we can do. We can pray that no matter who it is that steps in there. However, again, while we're fighting this battle, while we're looking at the battle of family and of our children, and we're wondering how is this going to get back on track, we also have to see that we have to start with ourselves. We must start with ourselves. And the only way you can start with yourself, and it's almost like a dirty word, is self-honesty. That's all you can do. We have so many things that I can tell you about that we have in psychological terms that we can call an actual treatable mental illness. It could be a personality disorder. It could be a what they call axis one. It could be a like a schizophrenia or an actual physiologically based entity that has with it depression or all these different kinds of main umbrellas. And then underneath it, we've got the personality disorders. We have the medical disorders that actually cause mental display of certain things that cause you to be mentally dysfunctional. We have all these things we can talk about, but all of those they're what you can talk about. Well, so somebody's probably 5 years from now will actually have it in the DSM that there's an election stress. I mean, everything is going to cause us stress, right? Everything. There are people who have harmed other people because at the little league field. You've seen it. You know it. We see it in the paper. We've heard about people trolling. They didn't call it trolling then. Cheerleaders. Because their daughters weren't the best cheerleader. I mean, people just do people things. So we can have a lot of stress about that. But if we can hold the hands of ourselves, hold the hands of the child within, hold the hands of our own children, and help guide them in the world to listen to you, listen to you, listen to you. I heard Maya Angelou yesterday talk about in an interview. This was an interview a while back, but she's talked very vocally and written about it, about the brutal rape that she had to undergo as a child. And for a long time, many, many years, she never spoke a word, a physical word. She did not speak. And she says a lot of things around there, but she said a sentence I thought was very beautiful. She said, "My voice hadn't left me. I left my voice." So in her trauma, she had left her voice. For whatever reason, what she talked about was that she spoke this person's name who was a family member and not a family member, but I guess known to the family. And the person, I think, died at some point. And she felt because that she might have helped as a little child, a little 7-year-old child. She said it was my 7-year-old logic that thought that she might be responsible for that. And of course, little kids do that, as we all know. We do that. We've done it ourselves, or our children have done it. We've seen it happen. But I think that's I want to take that statement of hers and drive it home. I'd like to put it on a big billboard. My voice hadn't left me. I left my voice. Now, maybe I'm saying it backwards because I wrote it down after I heard it. But that is a key. Where is your voice, and who are you answering? Who are you talking to, and who are you responding to? Are you responding to a external world of anticipated social media comments, an external world of causes, an external world of rules and regulations handed to you by not only, whether it's your outside world, your family, whatever it is? This is something I think this has got to be the decade or the next 100 years of the voice, the real voice, not the TV show. Although, hey, you know, we got to get our voice, right? But you have to be able to understand that, or you're going to give yourself away to everything. And I don't want that for you. And I don't want that for me. Because we'll be constantly responding. I knew someone who, you could hear them, who would be thinking about something and they would go off into the bathroom and they'd start holding on conversations, angry conversations with people, all different kinds of people at different times. They were not schizophrenic. They were a very successful person. So we'll talk about that a little bit on the other side of the break, but find out what the voice is. And
you are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are with me, Dr. Michelle Live, walking this road together, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. So in the beginning of the program, I said, I want to talk about being a survivor, a real true survivor, a warrior survivor. We don't look at ourselves this way because most of you will have 1 to 20 electronic devices that'll plug you in and take you away. And we have affluence and we have grocery stores. I actually get to the point sometimes I run into a 7-Eleven or a Quick Trip or whatever, because I just don't want to have to go and look at 500 cereal boxes. I just don't want to have to do that. I'd rather go and just, or 5,000 different kinds of, and of course I'm exaggerating, cartons of milk. I get the kind, do I get the grass fed? Do I get the non-fat? Do I get the holistic or the organic, or do I get the not organic or the organic that's not grass fed? I mean, I just want milk. I just want milk. And if you want to talk about, we should have and we probably will at some point, a shopping stress disorder, to which we can go and say, I get clammy, you know, I get, my heart goes up. I start getting a, you know, kind of panicky because I think, oh my gosh, it's going to take me forever. And what if something's on sale? Then what? And then I got to read the sides. I mean, you could be there for hours. So I'm saying this a little tongue in cheek, but not only did this woman write, this was being talked about. I really actually was a little out to lunch. I didn't know it was being talked about exactly that as a disorder. She was talking about it days before the election. And today after the election, we have these very athletic, strong, good looking male psychologist, very professionally talking about this disorder as if it's a disorder and you can go and get medication and counseling for it. If you're so upset that you can't function, of course, no matter what, I'm not making fun of you. You really should. Whatever bothers you, because it's indicative of a problem. Now, the problem may not be the election. The problem may be that it's like me running a race. The problem may not be that I am hurting and that my doctor told me not to run because I have a spinal thing, or because I'm out of shape, because, you know, it's or whatever. I don't even know where to go with that other than that's not the problem. The problem is that then maybe I need to look at how can I do something? How can I build myself up? And if I can't, if there's things I can't control, if you have a leg gone or herniated discs or whatever, there's things you can't control at this point, then you have to find ways to get strong, ways to face life. And that's what this is about, because you can do it. I can do it. I don't always believe it. And I know you don't always believe it either. But what's holding us back? Where, as Maya Angelou said, where did we leave our voice? When did we walk away from our voice? When did we walk away? When did we decide to sit in this closed studio, like a sound studio of cognitive dissonance, where we just wallow and live, and we know, how many of you have felt those very feelings, like, I want to get on Facebook. No, I don't want to get on Facebook. That's kind of why I'm not on Facebook. But so many times I've counseled people who will get so upset. And a lot of people, let's say I know people with post-traumatic stress disorder who actually get so worked up from complete strangers because they see a comment on a Facebook page that isn't even their own Facebook page. Maybe it's a relative's or a friend's, and they get so upset by it, they start entering into a dialogue with some stranger who might just be doing this for sport. And meanwhile, this veteran or this other person that has been so hurt and wounded by cognitive dissonance and by betrayal and by whatever, that they, it becomes the key that unlocks an entire meteor shower of angst and anxiety and fear. And so we need to do something about this. So to bring this all back, because this is our last segment, to bring this all back, hold on to this Maya Angelou. My voice hadn't left me. I left my voice. That was her way of coping with a terrible trauma, and also her way of coping, actually, not so much with a terrible trauma, but from what I could understand from her interview, it was because she, in her sweetness and her innocence as a child, thought that because she had said his name, that she caused his death. So, and you can all look up the interview yourself, because it is a very touching of this elderly, beautiful woman talking about this thing that happened to her. But the good that came out of it, that's what just like got me. I thought, what am I complaining about? Look at the good that came out of her life. And she's saying with this beauty in her face, the good that came out of this. So, I want to read to you, remember how I always go back to Robert J. Wicks, because I love him, because he's I think he's a PhD. He is a psychologist who not only writes prolifically in the spiritual realm, but he is a trauma specialist, and he works with the people who are trauma specialists. So he's the specialist for the specialists who work with the traumatized, who work with the war-torn, who work with, you know, the national disasters or the natural disasters. I mean, he's been in the trenches. So he talks in this book, Riding the Dragon, 10 Lessons for Inner Strength in Challenging Times. I brought this to you before. In his chapter that it says, engage the spiritual darkness, but I think this is really good to, it's a general, he gives you some general tips. He's talking about spiritual darkness and how to face it. I think that they go across the board for your own incongruities, for things where you start to actually get disorders, for real disorders, for things that perhaps you shouldn't have disorders for. If you knew, if you understood that, oh, wow, certain things in my control, certain things are not. It's not that simple, but it is. Truth sometimes is, it's about being clear. It's about having clarity about what is and what isn't real in your life. He says, one of the lessons learned in the darkness is that we must face all our life with trust and courage. We must do this until it no longer takes courage, because we realize that we can hold on. Life can only be appreciated for what it is, as it is now. And although society, with all its games and schemes, would have us think this is defeatist, it is far from the truth. While others read from menus of what they feel they deserve or need, by living in the now, we can enjoy the actual food we have in front of us. If we can improve the meal, great. If we can make it different, great. But by being grateful, trusting, and open in the now, we never ruin the meal. We are being served now. The greatest gift of all is to never miss the joys and the grandeur of the life that is before us each day. Moreover, spiritual darkness, when it is fully embraced and allowed to teach us lessons we wouldn't learn if we were willfully in control, help us to embrace the following essential lessons. And I'm going to read you the lessons he gives us, because they're beautiful. And I need to hear them. Learning takes place when we join clarity and kindness. Learning takes place when we join clarity and kindness. Number two, great love is usually found in small deeds, not dramatic gestures or achievements. Number three, we must toughen our souls so we can deal with things that upset us, even though they really shouldn't. Number four, we need to travel light by erecting a barrier of simplicity between ourselves and the world. Number five, we need to come home to ourselves more often in a spirit of meditation and know why we sometimes avoid this beautiful prayer experience in our lives. And no, it's not because we are too busy. So I want you to ponder that, because I love going, this man, I go back to him all the time, and I have several of his books. And it's not that I like this one better. It's just, I can't ever go from this. I can't finish the resources in this book. And it's not a very big book, called Riding the Dragon, 10 Lessons for an Inner Strength in Challenging Times by Robert J. Wick. This just, it's only, you know, little over 140 some pages. That's it. And yet these gems are worth hours of YouTube videos, where they're worth hours of thinking, I have this disorder, I have that disorder. You may well have a disorder. And when you do, you need help. You always do. People sometimes get so many hits, or they get so triggered. Perhaps these people, it's the out of controlness they feel. And perhaps that goes down deeper into something from their life and from their childhood, or they feel like they are so convinced that this is the end. This is the end all. If it's the end, it is the end. I don't want to say that flippantly. I don't want to see it be the end, but we've always had a time where we thought it was the end times. Maybe it is the end times, but what really am I going to do about it? I'm going to go inward. That's all I can do, and live in the moment and enjoy the meal as it's being served, and know that if I can do something about one little corner, great. If I can't, I can't. And go on and keep your eyes open. Watch, see where you can make a difference, because it is in the little things, step by step, that accumulate. All right, I am Dr. Michelle. God bless you all.